Everybody, happy Sunday night. Today is February 25th, 2024. This is Across the Pitch. I am Mike Brer, joined with my two buddies, Dave Miller and Jose Nunez. Dave, we'll go to you first since your team, which I am proudly repping today, Gillingham, had the win this weekend. So how are you doing today, buddy?
You know, I'm good. As I said, it's a huge win yesterday for the Gills. I mean, it sets us up very nicely coming into the next couple of weeks. But, you know, it was also good to, you know, get to watch Union live again. It's been a bit of a layoff. Couldn't watch the game live in midweek, but you know, it was from the looks of things, we certainly won't be getting bored watching Union games this year, whether it's for better or for worse. We won't be bored.
I agree with you 100%. And Jose, I got to see your handsome ass face yesterday. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Exciting weekend, obviously. First home game for the season. Unbelievably cold. I came home actually, and even in the hour-long ride from the stadium back to my house or whatever it was, 45 minutes due to construction, like I couldn't warm up. So even like laying in my bed with sweatpants and a sweater and or a jumper, whatever you want to call it, was still so cold. And I actually feel sore in different parts of my body just from like shivering the whole time. You know what I mean? Like my abs suddenly hurt because I'm shivering for, I don't know, Mike, were those really 8 minutes of extra time at the end, or did that feel like 15?
I don't know, but tell me you're over 30 without telling me you're over 30. Tell me you're shivering for 3 hours after the game has ended. No, it was cold. Actually, it was like I usually wear like just a hat like this, whatever, but I was freezing, so I ended up buying myself a little Union beanie. It was very nice, $29 at the store, on like the small stores, not the major store, you know? So I agree with you, Jose. It was one of the coldest nights I can remember at Super Park. And we've been to plenty, I'm sure. But regardless, the Union pulled off a 2-2 draw. You could argue that they probably should have won 3-2, but we'll discuss that in a few minutes. But overall, I thought the game was kind of what we expected from the first home match of the season. In terms of the predictions, you two, congratulations, both nailed it. You had the Gazdag goal. And you had the 2-2 prediction by Jose. So we had some success on Saturday night. But we also had the Tuesday match coming up in about 2.5 days. So we're going to discuss that as well. But first and foremost, Dave, I'll go to you first. What were your thoughts on the match? Some players you kind of wanted to highlight or discuss today?
I think it was quite a weird match, I think, in terms of like, apart from, you know, the goal, nothing really actually happened. I thought it was such a dull game. I think about messaging in the group chat saying like there's quite literally nothing to write about in terms of obviously Mike Gidd's report, which of course if you haven't read it already, go to the AT Sports website and check it out, read it, share it. But yeah, I was doing my player ratings. It was just such a lack. It was such a half that lacked any real attacking sort of attacking threat from either side, apart from the goal, which obviously Semler couldn't do much of. Second half, things definitely burst into life more. You could see the Union had that intensity from the off. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, they were on the attack, similar to the second half against the Priest, actually. They were very much, the Union looked more, you know, more aggressive, more looking to get on the front foot in the second half. And we saw that immediately. They got on the front foot. They obviously eventually got the goal from Mikel Lua, which is obviously great to see him get off the mark for the season. And, you know, again, both teams somewhat had chances to obviously go in front. And unfortunately for Semler, sort of, I don't say it's a mistake, but perhaps his, I will say a mistake from Semler obviously led to the Chicago second goal and at the second attempt of asking Union. So obviously we had the offside goal before the Kalura goal. The second offside goal came, then obviously into stoppage time, Gazdag scored, and to be honest, I think the Union probably, as you sort of said, Mike, perhaps should have won the game 3-2, but they can definitely feel that they're a bit hard done by the game, perhaps didn't swing in their favour. There were a couple of moments in the game that perhaps the officials got wrong, and obviously with the ref shutout at the moment, poor officiating is probably going to be more the standard than usual.
That's a great segue into the point I was just going to ask Jose. Jose, you were there live with me. And I know Jim Curtin after the match said that he didn't have a problem with the officiating that we saw last night. I'd have to disagree slightly about certain of the calls that we had. One in particular was when Ua was going down the field and gets smacked in the back of the head. No call. Kai clearly wins the ball easily on the end line, and he gets called for a foul. So what were your thoughts on the officiating last night with these replacement refs we had to deal with?
Listen, first and foremost, I guess my stance on the whole thing is, yeah, I want the union to get what it's due, the referees mm-hmm. to get what they deserve, etc. So that's maybe where I stand, though I don't like this, you know, social piece of it all where they're trying to pressure one another on the social platform, you know, right? Of like, here's a statement and we're going to refute the statement, whatever. That's where I stand on the whole thing. But in terms of last night, there were some very interesting calls that I could just feel like, what are we doing here? Like, this is not great. One, I don't know if it's the same one you're referring to, Mike. I thought it was Carranza, but going at a one-on-one, the ball continues to roll past the defender, but Carranza gets brought down. And I'm thinking to myself, mm-hmm. yeah, no foul. And I'm thinking to myself, the ball continued to roll, but Carranza was brought down. Like, how is, like, that doesn't, the ball wasn't even, like, you know, like, deflected to either way or, like, the path changed. It was just a flat out, the ball continued, but Carranza's body was down. So I wasn't too upset about the officiating. What did upset me was, and Corey Rockwell, who's a former, is a current MLS ref. He retired from international play. He and I connected over the weekend. We're going to get together and have a conversation, just like a 15, 20 minute sort of recording. and he commented on Twitter of like, they got the calls that needed to be part of VAR, right? But, and I got to reread the tweet, so I'm not like saying it word by word right now.
Right.
But his point was, a more senior crew or a crew with experience, like the ones that are being locked out or have been locked out, et cetera, would not have gone to the point of needing VAR for those calls, thus not extending the game 8 minutes or having the crowd go bananas for no reason. You know what I mean? So, like, I appreciate Jim trying to stay out of it. Obviously, he dodged the question a little bit from the Inquirer on the pre-match press conference. And then just yesterday in the post-game press conference, said it was fine. I, too, would probably disagree in terms of how the officiating went. But I also want to be very clear. The people who are there officiating right now, yes, they're not the actual referees. Both the union and PRO, Pro, have been mm-hmm. very open about saying, please do not harass these refs. They're doing what they can with the situation. And you don't even know, man. This could be their make or break moment to maybe get a race, not a race, maybe get a better position, continue to, like, you know, like, it's a platform for them to propel themselves, right? At the brightest stage in the American game. So, like, yeah, it was tough, but they don't deserve any type of scrutiny beyond a normal referee. Not a stab, anything.
It is a thankless job. I could never be an official, whether it be middle school, high school, college, professional. It doesn't matter what – probably it's even worse in the lower ranks, like in terms of like school, because parents suck. Listen, I remember one time Aubrey used to play baseball, and we just had her in like these basic little league five-year-olds trying to hit a ball and pick flowers in the outfield. And you had some parents who gave way too much of a shit if their kid was standing on second base. It's like they are four. They want to pick their boogers and watch their friends have fun. Like, this is not that intense. So it's one of those things where I agree with what you're saying. It's hard for me to have some sympathy for these refs because it's like you're still – should have some wherewithal to make the right calls. But again, I'm not a ref, so I'm not going to say it. But Valerie, who, by the way, Val, it was great seeing you yesterday, says absolutely, reffing is a thankless job. And Vincent says it's frustrating, but there's only one man to blame here, and it's not the replacement refs. And also a great point. To Jose's point and Vince, your point, they're doing the best they can. And they are put in a position that is somewhat not fair to them, really, to be in this spotlight and to be scrutinized for everything when it's really – they may not be ready to be in that spot. But I did feel like the refereeing last night was a bit almost NBA-like, almost like they were trying to look for the call rather than just letting contact happen and then go from there. But go ahead, Dave.
Well, I mean, I don't know if the league's actually put out a statement or anything, or if they've changed the rules of the handball law changed this season. Because I don't know if you guys would see it at the stadium, but there was a clear as day, and no one, Bedoya was going crazy at the linesman. that Joe's stoppage time. There was a
I was right in front of it. I saw it was a handball.
I don't know if it was handball or if it would have been harsh. It was given, but going off the decisions that went against the Union last season and having seen some other MLS games and some penalties given for handball, that was a clear as day handball going off the handball rule or law in the MLS last season. So one, have they changed the law and is it now a bit more looser in terms, well, a bit looser in terms of, you know, the leniency with it, or have they just completely missed the call? And
that was one that people in the stands were calling for VAR there, because we had already seen it now twice with the overturned goals. So like, okay, well, when are we going to get it in our favor at this point? Pat Bernard, by the way, Pat, great seeing you yesterday, says hello. Walker, also hello. Go ahead, Jose. Yep.
What I want to ask, and Dave, obviously you work in the industry in terms of, you know, being actual PR for a soccer team, though your views and opinions are your own. Disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer. But what really frustrates me about referees, and this is maybe a holistic approach, and maybe there's a reason for it that I don't know about, but I never understood why, even if a foul occurs in front of a side's, an assistant referee on the sideline, why is it always? Why are they always waiting for the center referee to make the call versus them? There were a couple of pieces of fouls really yesterday where it was right in front of the referee on the side, the assistant referee, and he just kept his flag down, waiting for the center referee to make the call. And I'm thinking to myself, is there no empowerment here?
Could that be due to the lack perhaps of experience or perhaps the level they refereed at? Perhaps they are used to, you see it like in the EFL or in like the Football League over here in England, like below the Premier League. Like if something, again, the linesmen do give fouls, they'll shake their flag around to get the referee's attention to go, this is a foul. Like perhaps it's just not trying to sound disrespectful towards, you know, the game in America, but below the MLS, it's such a massive drop off, isn't it, in terms of the quality and probably the investment and the funding into the game. Like the standard of officiating is probably a lot different going from the MLS to the USL and everything below. Like perhaps everything, I don't know how refereeing is, you know, perhaps trained, how it's all done in America as well, but perhaps, you know, everything goes through the main referee in the center of the pitch as opposed to, do you know what I mean, or perhaps, you know, the ref. Perhaps they're used to perhaps speaking to the referee and just giving him the final say as opposed to taking initiative himself. Who knows? But I mean, in England, linesmen are much more, say, aggressive, but much more independent in the sense that they will give fouls if they see fit, even if the referee doesn't believe so. They will try to overrule him, but try and.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the offside goals. So we saw two instances where the goals got called back. The one was where Damian Lowe was clearly offside. I thought that was without question offside, and they made the right call there with VAR. The first one, which is in the 46th minute, was when Nathan, which Dave, you had mentioned on the Twitter channel, Nathan Harrell's going to have an assist today, and he almost did when he passed the Gosluck. Now, the angle that we saw, and our buddy Jimmy King from Philly Sports Network posted early on Twitter that angle, and I didn't see it enough for me to say it was clear and obvious, because that's what they need. For them to overturn a goal, according to the commentators and what we've seen so far, it has to be clear and obvious with the naked eye from that angle that it's offside. And to me, I didn't see it. But again, maybe the ref had a different angle than we did, and we only saw that one. Even for the I think it was for the second overturned goal, I don't know if they showed it on the screen or not at the stadium. I don't think they did. So it was kind of – we didn't get to see maybe what the ref saw from an angle. But for me, I didn't think it was enough. But that's, again, is what it is. For Vincent, says Damian Lowe was clear. The first one was far closer than not clear and obvious. Exactly. He says Cincinnati offside. The same exact thing. It was not enough for me to overturn it in one direction. But regardless, the Union still could have won that game. You know, is what it is. You walk out of there with a draw. Now, when we were discussing the lineup last week on Tuesday, we thought that rotation was going to happen on Saturday, and they're going to focus more on the CCC on Tuesday. That was not the case. In the post-match press conference, Jim Curtin said, we wanted to kind of ride the confidence from that Tuesday performance, carry it into Saturday, and use that same lineup to then, you know, get at least some sort of result at home. Now we have this lineup on Tuesday, just 2.5 days from now. Jose, what do you think this rotation is going to be? Because Jim Curtin has mentioned the rotation on Tuesday, and The thing is, on Saturday, we only saw one player come into the match as a sub, and that was Alejandro Bedoya. So what do you think for that, Jose?
And this is where I think Jim Curtin might do Jim Curtin things, and I, again, respect the guy. Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, well, I got you. I'm saying okay. Uh-oh to what your comment
no,
is.
No, I thought you said, oh, I thought you said uh-oh because he couldn't hear me.
No.
He knows far more than I ever will in terms of soccer, so I acknowledge that. Right. So I'm just an idiot speaking into a microphone, but I really do think that this might be a situation where he overthinks it and starts moving pieces that have been gelling so well, right? Like, mm-hmm. Can you imagine a lineup on Tuesday that doesn't have Nate Harrell and Quinn Sullivan? Like, I guess I can, because I think it seems like it's very – I mean, he put Chris Donovan starting against Inter Miami in League's Cup, so, like, he's done crazier things. But rotation-wise, man, I was disappointed to only see Bedoya come in with, what, like 15 minutes left?
He came in the 80th minute, yeah.
Yeah, okay, 10 minutes left. So, yeah, I'm expecting that, you know, he's going to break up a few things. I do think that it makes sense for Semla to start. Just let Blake really get healthy. Maybe he goes and plays against Kansas. I also do see a point to maybe pulling Glesnes out, just being very thoughtful and careful with that sports hernia that he got repaired last at the end of the season. I make it sound like it's a car, but you know what I mean. going under the knife. But then I think you then got to start thinking about these other center pieces. Like, does Jose Martinez maybe need a day off against a Saprissa game that has, you know, a team that has a mountain to climb to make it through to the next round. So maybe it makes sense for a Jose Martinez to step out and let Jesus Bueno take it on and go from there. I would also argue that maybe even Gazdag, just get him a night off so he can doesn't have to run, but have him ready in the case that he's needed. So I could see, honestly, 6 or 7 players being rotated. But I don't think you'll do that. I don't think you'll go to that extent. But I think you'll see a good bit of new faces. I don't think you'll see any debuts, but you will see some rotating faces.
Yeah. And Dave, go ahead.
Obviously, I know, like, again, again, going to Jose's point, obviously, you know, with, you know, the Saprissa game coming up, you've got the 2-goal advantage. The Union would, unless Saprissa score 3 or more, the Union just have to not lose by 2 goals and they're through. Because of the away goals and 3 goals they scored. And of course, I mean, just looking at the fixture list coming up, of course, they've got to travel to Kansas City next Saturday. But then just following on for that, you know, again, there was no rest. You've got to play the CONCACAF Champions Cup immediately straight afterwards against the Pachuca again on the Tuesday. And that's another 2 weeks, four games in the space of 2 weeks, you know, if they did get through, but don't look too far ahead. Because, I mean, but again, like, it's going to be a relentless run. I mean, again, the sort of Jose says, you're going to need to start getting players' minutes now. And perhaps Jim maybe looks at it in the sense of, I don't know if he'd want to throw the, no, I'm not going to suggest he's going to throw away
the CCC.
The CCC, but the league game against Sporting Kansas City. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
But, just resting everyone there and then going to the Pachuca game at full strength. But perhaps, you know, he makes certain changes ahead of Tuesday's game. You know, perhaps takes out Quinn Sullivan and gives him a rest. You know, cause again, he's what, 18, 19 maybe. Again, you don't want to run a young player like him into the ground too early. Might give Olivier Baeza some minutes. That's Olivier. That's something stupid. Olivier's been in the squad on the bench, hasn't he?
Olivier was suspended for the first match for the CCC because of the red card against LAFC. So he's good to go now.
I thought so.
Yeah.
They might make some changes then, and coming into the Sporting Kansas City game, you make some other changes. And at least everyone's had a break between now and, between the two games. And then you head into that Pachuca game, potentially. Straight off
the 5th of March.
Kansas City, yeah. I mean, again, it's gonna be a lot of traveling, of course. Then at least they then got 2 home games against Pachuca and Seattle, and then they got to travel to Pachuca if they do get through. I'd be interested to see if Ty Bariba actually gets any minutes, because again, I've been surprised at the lack of minutes he's gotten so far this season.
So that's an interesting point. And Jimmy brings up a question to Jimmy King from Philly Sports Network. Jimmy, always great to see you yesterday, as always. He says, who do you think is the most likely to take Gazlag's place if he gets a night off? So that's a great question, because you no longer have Torres to go back on.
Yeah.
I feel like Raffanello is the obvious answer. Now, again, how much How much faith does Curtin have on Raphinel to start in that place? I mean, he did bring him on late in the second half against Saprissa, but again, we were already kind of up 3-1, 3-2 at that point.
Yeah.
You'd think it would be Quinn as a backup. We've seen McGlynn at a 10 as well before. But again, Dave, to your point, and to Jose, to your point, there does have to be squad rotation. We have to make sure we are not burning ourselves out in the first month of the season. Unless, to Vincent's point earlier, you kind of soften the lineup against SKC and Austin and focus more on Pachuca and Seattle. And in that case, okay, then you put Raphinello against Seattle, or rather against Sporting Kansas City, and you give Gazlag a night off. And JD mentioned Sullivan, I think, shifts over the Gazlag spot. Then you maybe put Ali on the right. And again, Alejandro, okay, so let's go back really quick. I know we kind of started talking about Saprissa. I do want to talk more about Chicago, and I do want to kind of bring in the point with Bedoya and the rotation. So far, Curtin has had two games. In those games, I think his substitutions have been spot on. I think the way he brought out, I want to say, who did he bring out on the first match? He brought out, who did he sub out for? Quinn Sullivan got moved to the top, and Bedoya got put on the right-hand side. And I'm drawing a blank now who his first sub was against.
I think it was Bedoya on for Mikel, wasn't it?
That's right. Thank you, Dave. So Uwe comes out. Quinn Sullivan shifts up top, and Bedoya comes on the right. And you saw that change. You saw Bedoya was doing pretty well with the passing. Quinn Sullivan obviously did great in the forward position, and he contributed those two goals. On Saturday night, how many times have we seen guys where it doesn't matter if Uwa's maybe having a good game or maybe the certain parts of the formation are doing well. Jim was like, okay, 60th minute, let's take him out, put that, you know, Chris Donovan on. Okay, let's make the switch here for Leon Flock, etc. What we saw Curtin do was hold his subs and put Bedoya on the left of the diamond for McGlynn and let Nathan Harrell and Quinn Sullivan just continue to dominate on the right-hand side. And I thought that was good awareness from Curtin not to mess with what was working because it did work really well. So I'm going to give credit to Curtin on these last two games. I think the subs have been good so far, albeit maybe not rotationally-wise as beneficial. But in terms of Bedoya so far, Jose, he contributed a great pass to Jose Martinez to lead to that goal from Uwe. What were your thoughts so far on Bedoya's role this season in these two games? And how do you think Curtin's used him so far as well? You're muted, Jose. Or am I again muted?
No, you're good. I muted myself. Okay. Congratulations to John McCarthy. Just moved from LAFC to the LA Galaxy. And on his very first match, or the very first match of the season for the LA Galaxy, he is picked as the number one, making his debut. So congratulations to him. 56 total appearances for the Union organization between the Steel at the time and the Union senior team. So quick congrats to him. In terms of Bedoya, man, I think you're right. The Union or Jim has been very, very good at subbing in when they did. Though I must admit, I think it was almost scripted to bring him in the very first home game last night. I selfishly will go ahead and call that sort of like the Union makeup tour, right? Like every single home game, you'll see that guy come in, and obviously he deserves it, but also as part of the we sort of screwed up the whole thing with the report from the Athletic. But it's interesting what he brings, and Dave, I think you'll be my number one fan on this. And you've always backed me on this, but this is what we've been talking about for 1 or 2 years at this point, right? How does the city move on from this player? And obviously it's been very, very tough. A lot of social pressure in terms of bringing him back and wanting him back, and I'm glad they did, whatever. But this is the role that he should have probably taken last year, especially after that stretch where he missed 7, 8, 9 games because of a hamstring injury leading into League's Cup, I think. So maybe this is the role that he should have been in all along. And who knows, man, like, is that when Quinn would have flourished a little bit earlier at 18 rather than 19? Who knows? But all in all, can't be too upset with the way that he has been used and what he brings, because it really does seem like when he comes in, it adds a sense of, as Vince says it, right? Stability when the ground's a little shaky, or, you know, that there's nerves in closing out a game. I genuinely don't think that the Union score in the extra time last night without Bedoya in. I really don't. And I know he, you know, did, I hate to say very little, but he had that pass and that's great. Hockey assist, really, right? So, yeah. Like, without him, I don't know that the Union tie that game, and that becomes one of those very few losses at Subaru Park. But those are my two cents on it.
No, I think stability and organization is spot on. In terms of even what we saw against Saprissa, he wasn't doing anything flashy or showy. He was just making good passes, contributing offensively on the right-hand side. It just seemed like it was just, to Vincent's point, organized. And Jillian also chimes in. It was nice to hear Kevin Casey's announcement of Bedoya coming in. And Jillian, great seeing you last night. Can I say a funny story real quick, guys? So as you guys know, you two know me better than everybody else who's watching. I'm farsighted. I need my glasses to see, like reading. But I can see you guys out in the open or whatever. But I have trouble seeing people's faces sometimes from a distance. So I'm walking out of the press room, Jose, and I'm just like walking down. And I see Jillian from like a long distance. But I couldn't actually physically see that it was her. So I'm like staring at her like, is that Jillian? And I'm just looking at her like, oh, it is Jillian. I almost ignored her completely because I couldn't see that it was her face. So Jillian, I'm sorry I almost ignored you. But I have to just say it's my vision. I just sometimes have trouble with faces until I get like 10 feet away from you. But regardless. So to your point, Jose, with Bedoya, I think it's great. I think the way the lineup has looked so far in terms of what he's contributed has been awesome. But can we talk about that goal real quick that you mentioned? The pass from Quinn Sullivan with the outside of his foot to Bedoya, and he one times it to Jose Martinez, was great. But Jose Martinez's awareness to continue his run, because he was calling for the ball first from Quinn. He sees that it goes over his head, and he makes the loop around. And you want to talk about the other goals we've seen so far? If you go back to the Uwa goal? Quinn Sullivan does the same thing. He stops his run and then continues right before he gets offside, and he makes the run there. We've seen it now with Saprissa, away at Saprissa, the runs that these guys are making into the box. And listen, I know we've been talking about the Union running it back again, and they're kind of just putting the same lineup out there again. If you had a bunch of new players, you wouldn't have this chemistry that you're seeing right now. And these runs and this off-the-ball movement and this passing does come from chemistry and playing together endlessly for the past, what, 3 or 4 years? So somebody on Facebook that I posted on earlier had said that the team is really like lackluster right now, basically. And I said, you're looking at these goals that they're putting together. These aren't fluky goals. They're really good, strong team goals that they're organizing. Dave, what are your thoughts? I mean, am I overhyping this offensive attack so far?
Hold we have up.
Five goals. Go ahead, Dave. Yeah.
Hey, hold on. Before you go, Dave, this is a huge kudos to you, what Mike said initially. You have been calling for Jose Martinez to get a chance at the eight.
Kevin Kincaid. Go ahead, Jose.
To get it. Wait, what did Kevin say?
He said the same thing you're about to say. Okay. Go ahead, Jose. Yeah.
Dave, you've been on this train for 2 years now. How dynamic, stinking Martinez is. How fast and creative he can be. This is kudos to you, dude. You've been calling for this, and I think the Union have really seen it, though you could argue that maybe Martinez adds more value as the six, but we wouldn't know unless Bueno steps in and gives it a shot. But I just want to give you your flowers, Dave. That was an awesome, awesome, you know, 2 years ago you came up with that.
Yeah, but I just think, again, I was just going to talk. I was clearly, they watched, clearly, you know, they listened to the podcast. I mean,
that's what they, I mean, as Todd Lewis says, we're the goats. That's it.
I'll take my flowers, Jim. I'll take my flowers and my money now. No, in terms of, I mean, again, it's Martinez is such a dynamic player, and you know, and I think perhaps maybe it's a difference in tactics, maybe it's a difference in approach, but we didn't see these sort of goals last season, you know, having players making off the ball runs, making more advanced runs to get in behind, you know, having players playing off each other. We didn't see that last season. We didn't see it the year before. You know, it was, you know, players get the ball, players stand there and, you know, hope. Do you know what I mean? There wasn't players trying to work into space or create space for others. Do you know what I mean? We haven't seen that for the last couple of years. So perhaps that's something they've been working on this offseason, which is obviously great to see. And obviously, I'm glad also, like, you guys sort of brought up, you know, the man of the goals. Because you look at the goal in the, I think it might have been the equalising Saprissa. You know, the way, again, I think the ball was playing to Gazdag's feet. I think Uwa's feet and Gazdag making that run, overlapping run in behind. To sort of get beyond him, you know, just players are moving into the space that's there and actually taking risks off the ball as well as taking risks on the ball, which we haven't seen in the last couple of years. And you know, I think we've said it a couple of times, Mike, you know, like, probably Jose as well. The players would get the ball and they'd shit themselves and they'd be like,
yeah,
okay, what do we do here? Do we play it simple and go backwards? Or do we play it like... But, you know, they're actually playing these more intricate passes. They're trying to take the risk. They're trying to play the game between the lines. And they're trying, you know, trying to thread the needle. And that's what this team perhaps... You know, when you do lack pace, when you do lack more direct players, and obviously... I'm going to have a really outlandish shout in a minute, and I want to see what you guys think of it. But when you guys play, when you actually play, it's more like when you have got the players that can actually, thread the needle, like Jack McGlynn's and, even Jose Martinez, Ali Bedoya, these sort of players that when they do take risks of their passing, good things happen. And I think perhaps it's taking Jim a couple of years to realise, or perhaps, this offseason, him and his coaching staff sat down and thought, things have gotten a bit stale. We've become a bit predictable. But last year, watching Union, it was like pulling teeth out. It was so frustrating. I think you look at the Chicago game last year, of course, the Union won the game 2-1, but it was like they ran out of ideas. It was actually get the ball out wide, cross the ball, get the ball to Bedoya or whoever played on the left, Leon Flock on the left. Wait for the overlap, pass the overlap, across the ball. But now you've got more players making runs off the ball. If Jack McGlynn's got the ball in the middle, I think we saw it in the first half. He literally had the ball in the centre circle. Nate Harriels made a bursting run down the wing. And instead of just passing it to Kai Wagner, he's played that ball in between, in the gap or in the space that, Harold ran into. And it was such a good ball. And we've been seeing more of that player again. I'm just so happy to see them running into space. And not only is it going to, perhaps make the Union more dangerous in terms of going forward. It's going to make teams defend the Union differently as opposed to what we saw last year. But my other shout is, I think Quinn Sullivan could be the next El Senior in terms of what he offers out wide.
Dave, I'm not going to disagree with you because I sat in the River End for the final 25 minutes of the match, right? But I was more so towards the right. We're right in front of Quinn Sullivan, Nathan Herr when they were coming down. And man, the two of them work together so well. And that's what Curtin highlighted as well. I mean, he mentioned the right side of the formation was playing so effectively. And there was one sequence where it was Nathan, Quinn, and Uwa together in a very tight space. Uwa, by the way, played a whole match. Good for him. Very tight space. And you see them just boom, 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 boom. These passes were so effortless. And they were just they seemed poised and calm with the ball. But I thought, man, Quinn is really just stepping his game up. For one, the shot that he missed in the first half, the start of the second half, I mean, he missed it by an inch. He just barely missed that. But you saw it against Saprissa, and you saw it again last night. He's not winning one-on-one battles really effectively. He's just making the right move at the right time. And also, they're going to go back to these, I like Will Valerie saying, Quincinho. Put that on a shirt. I like that. Vince says the poise started with the subs on the road at New England in that playoff game and has evolved into something else this year. And I agree. They just seem like the players like McGlynn, Sullivan, Bueno, they have gone through their growing pains of the last 2 years. And now we're finally seeing a more finished product of what they can be. They're not teenagers anymore. These are young men now. Whose skills have been taken to the next level. And now teams really have to be mindful of McGlynn and Sullivan and even Nathan Harriel, who I thought made some great runs last night. They can actually now play at a veteran-style level. So it's, to Valerie's comment earlier, is it too early to get our hopes up? Dare we get our hopes up? I'm pretty pumped up. I don't know about you, Jose.
I'll selfishly plug. I put out a post on Twitter earlier, and I'll flesh it out a little bit more. I spoke with Quinn. The press spoke with Quinn, but I was with him initially and got like two or three questions and then a fourth question. But, when I asked him, self-reflection is usually pretty tough. I'd love to hear from you, Quinn. How do you assess your first two games this season? And very open about, I feel like I'm doing great. I feel like I'm getting the chances. I am, however, maybe making mistakes in the final third, and I need to improve on that. But all in all, I feel like I've had a great start so far, and I hope to keep it up. And then I finally asked him, short-term goal, is it the Olympics? Because obviously he's been – that pool for the Olympic team is so, so deep that actually Gutierrez on the other side of the ball – last night, the guy who scored against Semla with that shot from outside the 18, probably a shoo-in to be in the Olympic roster. So Quinn was very quick to say, absolutely. My it's crazy. My cousin, Chris Albright, represented the U.S. in the Olympics. So I was like, that family tree is freaking incredible. I would love to. It would be an honor, and that's what I'm shooting for, of course. So he has hopes and goals to somehow finesse his way into this roster. It's coming so fast over the summer. And in July, I think, it's the Olympics. So there's a friendly I know there's one friendly announced. I've heard rumblings of a second friendly announced for the Olympic team. We'll see. It's mid-March, so we'll see if Quinn finds his way into it. But just really interesting to hear a 19-year-old be so open about his performances and actually sort of like challenge himself, right? Almost like years ahead of his time. At 19, dude, I was still wondering if my mom put the cheese sticks in the oven, you know? Like, yeah. What a difference.
Well, I mean, it goes to what Curtin has said with Bueno in terms of just kind of doing your time and earning your stripes. And yeah, it sucks being in Union 2 sometimes when you know you have the quality to play on the first team. But it kind of does have to get you to the point they're at now. And yes, they're 19, 20 years old, but they're playing like they're 24, 25 because they've also had CCC experience. They've had, you know, Leagues Cup. They've had these competitions and these high-level games that are, though they're on the bench, they're still experiencing. They're still training at these levels with these players who are able to compete at those. And JD says Olympics are 7/24 to August 10th, same time as Leagues Cup. Okay, gotcha. Thank you, JD. Appreciate it. And by the way, JD and I trying to cover some Seton Hall basketball. Appreciate you helping me out, JD. Or me helping you out, rather, for that. But to your point, Jose, with Quinn on the final third, I do think somebody's a little trigger happy at times with his shot, and he skies one over and over. But he's getting there. You know, there's one instance in the first half where he kind of sky one over the net. Ended up being, an offside call or a foul. But he had Michael Uwa wide open on the right, probably for a much easier pass. But he ends up just taking a shot at net. But at the same time, to Dave's point and what he's been calling for over the last year or so, is you want players who are kind of trigger happy and who will go for a shot and try to create. Because sometimes that's all you need. I mean, look at Gutierrez. If we didn't talk about the first goal from Chicago. But all he did was kind of put it to his right and just launch it at net. I mean, we've seen players sky that multiple times, but he just ended up drilling it in the back of the net. There's not much Semel can do on that one. But Dave, any thoughts on either Sullivan or anybody else that we didn't talk about last night in the performance?
I mean, obviously, it's great to see Sullivan finally get his time. So I think, just to quit before we move on to another player I thought was excellent. And of course, you've obviously mentioned him already, but, I think it's good to finally see his time. Obviously, we've had to bide our time with him. Obviously, you know, when he I think it was 2021, not 2022. Obviously, when he's done like go Mika Richards on him, being like when he was. I think if you're going to look for definition of bursting the scene, it's being like just turning 18. It's going overhead kick on your professional debut in football. Again, funny enough, against Chicago, we've had to wait to get to see him play more consistently. Last season, he was more off the bench. He might have played the occasional game as a striker, but, now actually, seeing him, perhaps look at him in a position he looks really comfortable in. Obviously, we all had this perception of Quinn as a more advanced number 10. Again, sort of said like a winger sort of player, or like a false nine striker, but he's obviously found his place on that right side of the diamond, which we thought was nailed on to be Jesus Bueno's place. But obviously Quinn Sullivan perhaps adds that more direct attacking sort of threat. Cause, I mean, no disrespect to Gazdag, but I don't think he's the sort of player that you can rely upon to be the sole creative purpose in your team in terms of getting on the ball, trying to make things happen, trying to take on players. But I think Quinn has that ability. We can see with his dribbling, what we have seen, he has that confidence to be able to take on a player, get the ball down the line, try and beat a couple of players and get the union high at the pitch.
Yeah. And how about this with what Vincent says? Would you put him as an inverted left winger? Now, we've seen Quinn on the left a couple times. Not a whole lot. Well, I think maybe a year and a half ago he was on the left, I think, for one match. What do you think, Dave, about Quinn's ability maybe on the opposite side?
I think in terms of when he says inverted left winger, I think perhaps he means it's a part of the front three with like two players either side of a striker with them perhaps playing more narrow in terms of perhaps like a 4-3-3 or like a 5-2-2-1, maybe. I don't know, but I think it could definitely work in terms of him coming, cutting in on his right foot, and you know, then him getting the ball on his right foot and, you know, cutting inside and shooting, or, you know, having Kai Wagner on the overlap for him to sort of, right, you know, perhaps take that winger or the defender's attention so he has that more space in there to move. It could definitely work. I think perhaps, you know, having a player like Quinn be the, you know, the utility man that he is in terms of he can play so many different positions can definitely help the Union if they do ever need to change their formation. I was just going to mention a point earlier, but perhaps I might leave it for another time, obviously. But, you know, again, another player who I thought was fantastic and for me was my man the match yesterday was Nate Harriel. I thought he was I thought he was absolutely fantastic off of plenty going forward. He had I can't remember a Chicago attack really, you know, or Chicago really creating anything down that their left-hand side / you know, Nate's right. I thought it was fantastic. He got into great attacking areas. I thought Nate was fantastic.
No, I agree. I thought Harold played well, and it's really going to make it tough for Olivier to find any playing time on a consistent basis when Nathan is playing as well as he is, because he's not just contributing on defense. You see him being offensively just what's up, little man? Just being very difficult to handle for opposing teams. But you mentioned the word utility, and I think that's a great kind of segue into what we want to see from Bueno. So Kevin Kincaid earlier today posted kind of what you've been mentioning with Jose Martinez, how he wants to see him on the right-hand side. We've seen him with his national team be on the right. But having versatile players in this lineup, when you kind of have some depth issues, is crucial, because you're right. You could put Quinn on left if you want to. You know, you could put McGlynn on the right side of Dom. You can have Bueno on the right. You can have Bueno on the six. You know, you could put Quinn at the 10 if you really wanted to, or as a striker. You have all these options now to play with. And I would love for Jim to at least try one game with Bueno at the six and Jose Martinez on the right. And then I know that we've been kind of calling that for a bit now, and we've seen Bueno on the right and Martinez on the six, but I would love to see it the opposite direction and see what we could do with that. But I think the utility of these players and the versatility that they have, and we look at Harriel too. We've seen him. Haven't we seen him on the left side of the three in the back before too, as a center back? Right? So
hopefully never again.
Well, because we didn't see a Kai for a bit, so I know they threw Nathan back there. So the versatility and the utility players that we have on this roster are pretty exciting to see. Anyone else that you can think of from yesterday's match? Because I mean, I really think we have to say Gazdag too had a strong performance. Yep. What did you think of Daniel's performance yesterday?
Oh, Daniel got into some very good areas, and I think perhaps probably in his best sort of position, it's like a false nine sort of,
yeah,
that Frank Lampard role where. You know, Lampard was much more well-known, not as a creative midfielder or like an engine room midfielder or a midfielder who could, you know, get on the ball and take control of the game, but perhaps more of a late runner getting into attacking positions at the right, being there in the right place at the right time, which obviously was so important for him when he scored those 20-plus goals season a couple of years ago. But again, I think last year the biggest criticism of Daniel was, you know, the fact that, you know, he was struggling to get into those positions to perhaps create the chances. And he was only scored from the penalty spot. So to see him get off the mark so early this season from open play is massive. Was massive, I think, not just for the team, but his confidence and the fact, you know, okay, he was offside for a couple of chances. He was offside for a couple of those chances. Obviously, he was offside for the one we hit the post from a couple of yards out in the first half. He was offside, obviously, for the goal. But it's good to see him making those runs and, you know, off the ball runs to get into those positions where he feels like or knows where the ball is going to be or going to be played into or is going to sort of deflect. And that's what sort of a player like Frank Lampard did. He always got on those. He was always hovering around those positions or making those late runs into them areas to take advantage. And perhaps that's when you do become a mark again for all three of those chances, not just the one we hit the post where he managed to sort of peel away in behind Carranza unmarked. The second is offside goal, which again, he was unmarked. He did well to make that sort of delayed run and come away or, you know, peel away from his marker. And then the actual goal itself, again, there was not a player around him for all three of those chances. So again, perhaps he's finding his feet again at what makes him tick or what he's best at. And just again, moving to the point earlier, that's what the big differences between this team from this year and last year is already the off the ball movement, the creativity in terms of making the movement and trying to create stuff off the ball, as well as, trying to do, having players on the ball, trying to do stuff, players are off the ball, trying to find the spaces that, they can utilize and they can take advantage of. And again, two games, five goals, can't do much better.
No, and I'm going to bring up a point in a second about Daniel, but Vincent says Carranza was all over the place in possession, coming back deeper and allowed Gaza more freedom, moving wide and forward more. But Dave, you mentioned Daniel, and I want to just also highlight, if you go back to 2023 last year, he got a grade one knee sprain in August. It was during the Leagues Cup. Remember, he missed the quarterfinal game. But I feel like after that, he never was 100% with his knee since then. So if you're going back to August, and we played until what, November, right? Mid-November, early November of last year. I don't remember if Daniel really ever healed from that knee sprain. I think he tweaked it a second time too, if I remember correctly. And if somebody out there remembers if he did or not, I could have sworn he tweaked his knee again. So not only does he look more comfortable and free right now, but he's also healthy. At least you think he's healthy.
Yeah.
But the Union so far, I mean, yes, Elliott missed the game, is missing right now because he had, I believe, an injury or so. But this team's coming back healthy. And if you have Goslog healthy and playing the way he is, I mean, just it gets even better. And then, Ballard says, he did hurt his knee again. Okay, so look, he played, what, 2 months, 2.5 months on a bad knee? That impacts the way you play. That's going to do it too. But honestly, I love just the fact that he's scoring and it's not at the penalty spot. And Julian says, Daniel was very good last night. Great pass to Quinn Ua, and that header was a chef's kiss, which was great. And also the fact that he had a header for a goal was bizarre to see because he just doesn't do that kind of stuff. And Valerie mentions, or I'm sorry, Vince mentions, you're correct. Lessons, Goslog and Flock played through injuries. I tweaked again. So I'm happy for Daniel. I think scoring open play is important right now, both for him and Michael Ua, to get these goals right away. We saw Carranza obviously break through with the hat trick, but we need these top three to be clicking at the same exact time. And that was what we did not see last year. We didn't see these players clicking at the same exact time. They're like, okay, Ua had a couple goals, and Daniel hit it from the penalty spot, and Julian had a concussion. He was out for a bit. So it's just one thing after another. So I'm, again, happy for these forwards to get going. Jose,
go ahead. I would actually argue that you don't want them all clicking at the same time.
Okay, because go ahead.
Because that's the idea of sort of having like a trident sort of thing with strikers, right? You want when Carranza's on a bad run, you want Mikel Ua and Gazdag to take over, but then Gazdag goes, let's say, injured. You want the other two to step in and sort of, you want them all to be sort of consistently scoring. But I don't think you want all of them getting hat tricks on the same game, and then having a drought. So yeah, it's really interesting to sort of hear a lot of things are going well, and obviously it's only game two of the season, but I really do feel like it's crazy to think that, for as much as we think about depth, the Union within the next 2 months will get a brand new midfielder back in terms of Leon Flock coming back from that torn pec. So it's crazy to think that, like, where do you put him, right? Or if you're Leon and you're watching the performances of Jack McGlynn.
Jack, who's played great.
Right. You're just – Leon's probably like, what am I going to do? Like, there's very little for me to do to gain that spot back unless – I mean, rotation, I suppose. And, yeah, as I think it was JD mentioned, the dates of the Olympics, that's when he – maybe Leon gets his tryout, right? Because Jack's certainly a shoe-in for the Olympics, but who knows, man? It's a win and a draw so far, but I had such low expectations going in considering the roster that it feels like this is an awesome victory so far.
Yeah.
The issue. Go ahead, Dave.
I know, Jose, I agree. But I think again, like. As you sort of said, in terms of the three strikers clicking, I think, I'll make a couple of points quickly. Obviously, in terms of the strikers clicking, I think I agree with Jose's point. You don't want them all scoring in bunches at the same time. You sort of, it's great that, I think, one point, it's great that they've all gotten off the mark early in the season. Mm-hmm. And so, we're not sitting here waiting in 10 games' time. We're like, fuck, Gazdag still hasn't scored this season, or Ua still hasn't scored. They've all actually scored. But I think, again, just watching the games, the first three games, like you're not sitting there going, what the actual hell is Uwa doing? Like, what's Gazdag contributing? Like, we had so many times last year, like, Uwa would be a passenger all game. He would never be involved. We look at the chasing, the running he did yesterday, and putting Chicago under pressure. The way he performed on the, you know, the way he performed in Saprissa's running, they were chasing down lost causes, trying to cause havoc and, you know, causing issues. I mean, it's great to see. And the second point as well, it's amazing what happens when you keep a player like Mikel Uwa in the game, you know, the club's record signing, as you sort of alluded to in the substitutions earlier, Mike. Jim was such a, perhaps become more poised with his changes instead of just making changes for the sake of making changes at the allotted times he always makes them. Like, oh, it's 55 minutes in the game, or we've had 10 minutes in the second half, or we're in the hour mark. I've got to take off one of my strikers now to keep things fresh. Well, no. You've signed this guy for X amount of money. He's one of your best strikers. Keep him on the pitch, because that's when, that's how, you know, that's where your goals come from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's when your best players do, that's when your best strikers do end up scoring the goals, because when you leave them on the pitch, when teams begin to tire, do you know what I mean? And it's going to do Uwa the world a good. It's going to do the world a good.
I agree. And Vince says, we're going to need depth for the potential call-ups, but Leon Alebueno as subs to close out a game is a scary good thought. And that's kind of scary. Again, I think we've mentioned before having Leon be that like closer sub where he comes in late on game, maybe 80th minute, 75th minute, we're up 2-1 or 3-1. You just need to close out the game. You just need a defensive mind, because the problem with Leon Flock coming in, I mean, this is now 2 months ahead of us. We're way too far ahead talking about this. But my concern with bringing Flock in on a steady, consistent role is messing with the dynamics that we're seeing right now. The passing is so good right now. And Flock has been a player that has been so defensive-minded just because his offensive skill has not been there. I'm curious. We've seen the growth of all these players around him. I'm kind of curious to see what he can do now. I mean, this is his third year with us now. I mean, has his passing got better? Has his shots have been better? His crosses? Like, what has he done in the offseason to help compete? Because to Jose's point, you're right. If you're looking at all these players in front of you, how do you find minutes at all right now if you're Leon Flock, if it's not for a call-up or an injury that kind of causes that? But, again, Jose, go ahead.
I was going to say, honestly, Leon, I don't know, man. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Leon gets a shake at Union 2 for like a couple of games to kind of like bring him back. But the Union obviously rate him. Oh my God. Okay. I have the LA Galaxy game next to me. Miami looks awful. So that's great. but yeah, I don't know where Leon sort of fits in this puzzle now, especially with how dynamic this team feels, I should say, which is a weird thing to say considering that Jack is like one of the stiffest players possible, right? Like he's not moving like some of the, like a Jose Martinez or like some of these other guys, right? Like a Julian Carranza, et cetera. And then the way he pivots left and right, he's more like a north and south type of guy. Mm-hmm. But I saw someone comment on it, and I think it was Vince actually, if you don't mind putting this up. There are going to be so many opportunities for players. And I think that's where like the Jamir Berdicios of the world and the Nick Parianos and some of the others faces that, you know, the Marcus Andersons, who obviously has already gotten his debut.
Or Macania, maybe.
Yeah. that during Leagues Cup might genuinely be a Union 2 tournament for the Union.
The Union, you know, 2 lineup today look good, by the way, but go ahead.
And I'm not calling that as an like, it's not a knock. It's just like genuinely like Gazdag. I think the timing's interesting. Where like I think potentially Bueno and Martinez are out with Venezuela for Copa America, and then you have the young bulls of Nate Harriel and McGlynn probably in training camp for the Olympics,
mm-hmm.
and then you think there are going to be so many open spots that it'll be interesting to see where everybody fits. And that's where like a Leon Flock fits in, and Nick Pariano, Jamir Berdicio, as daunting as the hill looks, I'm really interested on to how the Union tackle this uphill battle of the summer. It's going to be fascinating.
Actually,
go ahead.
Scott has mentioned it already. That's good. That's the point. The recruitment in the off season is such a huge concern, like, as not only just as Jose mentioned there, like the amount of players that can be gone during the summer. they're going to lose John this summer. Do you know what I mean? Like, where's the depth? Do you know what I mean? Of course, we sort of mentioned, you know what I mean, Bueno and like Martinez, or whatever, but there's a big chance that Bueno, both Bueno and Martinez both go to Copa America. As you sort of said, like, you're going to lose Jack McGlynn to the Olympics. You can potentially lose Quinn Sullivan. You can lose other players. Possibly
Nate Harriel.
Nate Harriel yeah. might go to the Olympics. Like, Olivier Mbiza may leave during the summer as well, but might finally get his move back to Europe. So again, from all we know, unless circumstances change, Nate Harriel, Olivier Mbiza is still looking for a move away and looking to, you know, perhaps still looking for a move away. Summer may be the best time for it to materialize. The lack of experience in the signings they've made, obviously in Garbo yeah. and players like that, but they're all kids. Do you know what I mean? Are you going to then chuck kids? You know, Jim doesn't trust the players the young players that they bring in as anyway. Is he going to trust these kids and chuck them straight into the fire when the going gets tough during the summer? You've got a contest with Leagues Cup, potentially more CONCACAF Champions Cup games, the MLS. Do you know what I mean? It's going to be intriguing summer.
Go ahead, Jose.
I was going to say, I'll argue that Jim trusted Jesus Bueno during the summer in Leagues Cup
yeah.
and giving him the opportunity. And obviously earned himself a contract. But granted, he had been in the system far longer than a Jamir Berdesio and a Nick Bariano. So for what it's worth, maybe summer is a Jeremy Raffanello era's tour.
As I say, even in Ngarbo, who obviously was on the bench against Saprissa, but wasn't deemed suitable enough to be on the bench for the MLS games. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they approach things coming up this year.
I'm predicting it now. There is going to be a point in this season, and I think it is Leagues Cup, where the diamond is going to be Macania, Berdesio, Flock, Orton, Gabo, and Raffanello in the diamond. Those four players at the same exact time. And I don't want to say that, but I think with the calls, I do think the Union can advance in the Champions Cup by the way they're playing right now. I do think that Jim will put Leagues Cup behind these other two tournaments. And maybe to Jose's point over the past year, who is Curtin to say what competition he can choose to focus on, because we haven't won anything really yet. But I do see that being a Union 2 kind of showcase in Leagues Cup. So I do see that, you know, that formation being there. I was thinking, oh my God, like, that's a bunch of guys that we don't really know about playing these you know, highly competitive games against some Liga MX team. But I think that's kind of what you're going to have to deal with. And we're going to see that at that point, how well Tanner has scouted these young players like Macania, like Berdesio, like Ngabo.
Come back maybe in the summer?
Jose, you know more about Odata than we do. Do you think Odata comes back at all off loan?
I didn't talk about him on Friday. No, after reading that report, he gave that small interview with the Kenyan outlet, News Alley, Pure Sport, I think was the name of it. Yeah. I don't know, man. Those comments were pretty open to him just maybe finding a move away. So I would think, I don't know enough about the deal. My guess is that maybe there's a buy option. Who knows? And maybe Albor, I guess they're sort of shaping up to move up to the next division, get promoted. Maybe they go ahead and buy him. He just actually scored a banger of a goal. I got a post online, but I can't imagine that Odata comes back after the comments this past week.
Is this the Matt Real breakout tour with Leagues Cup? That's the one guy we haven't said anything about today is Matt Real. So is Matt Real going to be on the left-hand side of the diamond just thriving with the rest of them? We'll see. I mean, Vincent mentions, I don't mind the idea of a play the kids Leagues Cup, especially with a big CC's run. And I think, Vince, you have to just learn from last year. These players are running to the ground because you focus heavily on every single competition, every single game. I think you do have to sacrifice Leagues Cup, especially if you do advance to the CCC, because frankly, the Champions Cup is far more important. But I digress here. So 2-2 draw, some pros, some cons. I think overall we should be happy with 4 points in the first two games of the season, considering the elements, considering the turnaround, the travel, that kind of stuff. But we do have a game on Tuesday night. It is, I think, at 8:15 on Tuesday night. It's at Super Park. Jose, I know you're going to be going there to Super Park. Dave, obviously you're not. But can you watch Dave from England?
I'll probably have to watch in the morning, so I'll be at work. So it's on YouTube, okay. So I'll be able to tune in on YouTube. Okay.
Gotcha. I'm going to try to make it Tuesday night. Depends on my work schedule, stuff like that. So let's do a quick preview of this game, you know, just formation-wise. Dave, or Jose, rather, what do you think of formations looking for against Saprissa on Tuesday night, knowing Jim Curtin is going to rotate probably a little heavier than he should?
I think it's going to be a rinse and repeat formation-wise of what happened the first game. Genuinely, even with the characters or the faces rotating, yeah, they had a slow first half, but man, after talking to Eddie Mendez from the CRC Football SPAC account, who is an incredible wealth of knowledge about Costa Rican soccer, he was very quick to say, listen, if the Union go with that formation, and they did, it's just going to be an absolute wreck for Saprissa, because Saprissa is just not set up to withstand that type of pressure in the middle and then getting it off to strikers, etc., which is exactly what happened the second half. The first half, obviously, that disaster of an own goal from Glesnes, never mind probably the worst game we've ever watched Jose Martinez play. It was very, very bad. I just don't imagine that there's a repeat, no matter who's in the number six spot. So I think it'll actually be the same formation, just different faces. I think Damian Lowe sticks. I think Kai sticks just because he's a machine. I think Mbaiso gets in some way, shape, or form. Bueno, Quinn, maybe. I'm not sure. Either Carranza and Ua stick, maybe both. It'll be really fascinating. It's so hard to predict what's going to happen on Tuesday or what's going to line up on Tuesday, though it should be posted online come 5:30, 6 o'clock on Tuesday. And as Vin says, weather should be just okay. Listen, Vince, I'll take 53 and raining here versus what we just experienced on Saturday, which was what, like 19, 15 and windy? That was awful.
It was bad. Listen, for shorter that's people like myself, Jose, I hid behind others. That's the best I could do.
It was, you did.
That's why you tall folk, Hatcher. What'd you say, Dave?
That's why I need roofs at these stages, man. Crikey, it's the work. You wouldn't have to go to games, you know, wearing ponchos all the time. I have to, you know, put like five layers on so the rain doesn't seep through. Get some roofs at these stages.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I think people have mentioned like having some sort of retractable stuff over certain parts. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. But when you have that river behind you, man, you just feel the cold, like just hitting you so much harder. So once I got into the river end, I just tried to kind of tuck myself in wherever I could because it was just not a pleasant feeling. But no, I know Jim has always mentioned over substituting your lineups will typically lead to a bad performance. I don't think he rotates more than four or five players. I do agree with Bueno starting. I think you might even see Bedoya start because he's only played a little bit, you know, of intervals these last two matches. Julian says hot hands for the win. I don't know. It's hard to predict these lineups because you're right. We don't know how he's going to approach it. So I could see Bedoya start on the right. I could see Bueno in the six. On the left, I think McGlynn goes again. McGlynn's also a machine. I don't know if Matt Real comes in at all. Maybe he does a little bit in the second half if we're up by enough or not or whatnot, just to relieve Kai, because Kai did have a hamstring issue last year. If I remember correctly, again, somebody correct me if I'm wrong. I thought that was Kai Wagner's first hamstring injury for Chilean says, I meant for keeping warm. Okay, my apologies. But still, it goes both ways. But I mean, I don't know if maybe we kind of focus on that as well for Kai Wagner. I mean, he did have a hamstring injury last year. It's something that does linger and can come back at times. You also want to burn him into the ground. Yes, I know it's the first week of the season. I get it, but still. So maybe Matt Real comes and relieves him, or, you know, Ngabo or Makanya make an appearance as well. So we'll see. I think Donovan starts, if not comes in the second half, again, depending on how the game flows. He has a lot of faith in Donovan. He does. We've seen it time and time again, whether it's warranted or not.
What about the guy they signed from Wolfsburg, Baribo, for obviously over $1 million, which is obviously a huge purchase for the Union? Like, does he perhaps start the game? Does Jim give him time? Or
I don't think so. Matt DeGeorge from Delco Times was at training at some point, and he mentioned how Jim mentioned to him, I should say, how Ty missed about 2 weeks of preseason due to injury. So he's still sort of like getting back into fitness, sort of getting himself back together. But then again, like, man, like, I feel like we've been hearing this ever since he joined last year in terms of fitness and defensive work and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So who knows, man? For as much as they paid for him and as much as he's making, you'd like to see him sort of put something out there. And he's got a friendly, or Israel has a make or break game in March, I believe. Whether or not, if they win, I think they go to the Euros, and if they lose, they're out. But then again, in June, Israel plays against Daniel Gazdag's Hungary. So he's got a lot to play for and find his way to, like, you know, being good enough to make it to the national team. But I don't know, man. I doubt that Ty Bariba starts, but who knows, man. I'm hopeful to actually, and this is new to you two, but like, I might be actually at training tomorrow. I'm excited for that and in person for the press conference. So we'll see what happens tomorrow in terms of the players that are available or not. I'm also really intrigued. We haven't seen Mbaiso yet this season. So this sort of Saprissa having to climb a hill sort of makes sense for an Mbaiso game. Someone who's somewhat reliable. It's not like you're putting a 19, 18-year-old kid, right? Like, Mbaiso has had that experience.
I mean, I don't have a problem with Olivier. I don't. And I think I mentioned briefly in my article, I would have liked to see more production from him offensively last year. I think that's where Nathan Harrell has shined really a lot this year and at the end of last season. But to your point, Jose, he's reliable. He gets the job done. He's done better defensively in terms of mental miscues that we've seen last year. So I think Nathan should take a seat for Tuesday and just give him some rest. Again, even these young players like Quinn and Jack, and I get it, we've all been 20. We've all played endless games in a week because we had the ability to do so. But still, why take the risk when you have someone as reliable who has experience like Olivier? And he's been around for a while now. How long has Olivier been with us? 4 years, 5 years at this point? I'm losing track.
A little bit longer.
I feel like he's been here forever.
He featured with the Bethlehem Steel. So that's before 2020.
Wow.
Pretty sure.
Okay. Yeah. Dave, how about you? Any thoughts on the what's it called? The formation lineup?
I believe they'll probably go the same formation. So again, I could probably see Olivier starting. Maybe I don't have another starts, but I think he could get more meaningful minutes depending on how approach the game in terms of, you know, if they go 2-0 up in the first half, you know, Saprissa have to score 4 goals in the second half. Perhaps Jim, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I don't want to jinx it, but, you know, say hypothetically, if the Union do go a couple of goals up in the first half, like, you know, perhaps Jim says, "Sure, we got to go to Kansas for Saturday night. Okay, we'll bring Gazdag off, we'll bring Carranza off, we'll bring Martinez off, or whoever's playing, do you know what I mean? We'll bring the starters off, and then we'll chuck a Raffinello, we'll chuck in, do you know what I mean? We'll chuck in these bench, not bench players, but these rotation players, Jesus Bueno, we'll bring these players on to give rest, who knows?" I think I expect the same formation, but I think it's disappointing, obviously, you could go to the Bureau point with Jose. Obviously, yeah. He's not fit to start at the moment. And I think you do, Jose, like, we were told this last season, barely played last season. He was just getting accustomed to the league and everything. Like, but we never barely saw him play last year, even like in the playoffs when the Union were needing goals. He didn't come on. And he didn't, when the Union needed a goal or when, you know, looking for a goal against Saprissa, he didn't come on. And again, when the Union needed a goal on last night, he didn't come on. Like, if he's not fit enough to play, even off the bench, he shouldn't be in the squad.
That's very fair. Jose, I'm going to hit you with a little... go ahead. Sorry, Dave.
I was going to say, if he can't contribute off the bench, or he's not fit enough to come in and play, he should be in the squad. Okay, you can have him, you know, train with the team and everything and do the whole match day experience in terms of the warm-up, warm-down. That's absolutely fine. Teams do that all the time with players who are getting fit. But if he's not fit enough to contribute, and it's just in general for all players, if they're not fit enough to contribute or they're not fit enough to play in the actual game, even off the bench, don't put him in the squad, because then it just quite situations like this.
And that's why you have someone like Marcus Anderson coming in as a potential person who's going to steal those minutes, or even Quinn. I mean, look, if you look at what Jim Curtin did on game one, he shifts Ua out, and rather than just having a striker for striker replacement, puts Sullivan out of his eight up in the striker spot and just puts Bedoya there. So if you're having players like Sullivan and Donovan and all these other, you know, people contributing, why use Ty? So Jose, I'm gonna hit you with a little blast from the past here, okay? So I looked it up. Olivier Mbaizo, in 2018, he joined Bethlehem Steel to join his fellow Cameroonian Eric Ayuk.
Yep.
6 years ago, and Eric Ayuk is a name I haven't heard in quite some time. But listen, yeah, we're in an hour and 10 now. I had Todd Lewis this episode. I'm sorry, but it was a good conversation. So we're going to go Tuesday night. We have a game against Saprissa at Super Park, 8:15. I believe it's on FS2, if not on FS1, one of those channels. As of right now, I don't know when our next episode will be. Maybe next Saturday, Friday, Jose, maybe before the Sporting Kansas City match. What do you guys think? I know I can't make it Friday, so.
Well, Tuesday there will be a conversation again with Eddie Mendez of CRC Football's back. So another 15-20 minutes sort of rehashing what happened against Saprissa, what Saprissa needs to do. And actually I got Mark here, Kelkenberg, who helped us out with the draft picks that the Union got. He'll hopefully be able to join us in the press with the game on Tuesday, but he actually shared with me Saprissa lost over the weekend despite being a man up. What was it, 20 minutes? I'm sorry, they tied 0-0 their last game despite being a man up for like the last 15-20 or so minutes. So they're not coming in great form, and Vladimir Quesada, who is their coach, has already sort of been in shaky ground because of that's a team much like Germany. If you're a Bayern or a Dortmund and you're not in the top two, top three, maybe top four, you are just gonna be fired. And right now, my understanding is that Saprissa is actually number four in the league standings right now. So who knows, honestly, if Vladimir Quesada is sticking around for Tuesday, Just wanted to set the table a little bit better there with the shape that they're coming in. But who doesn't like a comeback story? I don't like it against us, but we'll see what Saprissa comes up with. But yes, Eddie will be in, and with Mike's help, we'll get that conversation on podcast and certainly on video on Twitter.
I love it. Okay. We got a lot to look forward to. And again, hopefully Mark can be there on Tuesday and I get to meet him. Looking forward to that match as well. So
he's again, a lot taller than I imagined.
Well, that's me. That's with everybody for me. So at this point, you know, that is what it is. So anyway, guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight on your Sunday evening. Valerie, Vince, Jillian, I think I might have missed somebody else who commented. Appreciate you guys joining in and helping in the conversation. JD Walker as well. This is Across the Pitch. We're trying to record a couple times a week if we can, at least once a week, depending on the schedule. That's Dave Miller, Dave GFC Miller. He covers Union as well as Jillian Hamm, who, again, they took care of business on Saturday. They took care of business. Jose R. Nunez 91. That's right. Jose R. Nunez 91 on Twitter, doing Substack stuff. Great work so far, Jose. It's always great seeing you again yesterday, buddy. Hopefully Tuesday night too. Again, I am Mike Barrera, mbarrera1323 on Twitter, and I just put out a TikTok video recapping my day at Subaru Park yesterday on my TikTok, so check that out. This is Across the Pitch, everybody. Have a great night. Duke.
Bye-bye.